It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. I'm Ben Ostro, founder and editor-in-chief of Football Zebras, joined by editor Cam Philippe, writer Pat Weber, and writer-analyst Chris Soybert. So we're going to jump right into something that made a lot of headlines this week. We had BYU and Utah. It wasn't so much the call on the field, it was the reaction to the call on the field. And, well, I'll let the Utah athletic director, Mark Harlan, explain it.
Been an athletic director for 12 years. This game was absolutely stolen from us.
We won this game. Someone else stole it from us. This was not fair to our team. I'm disgusted by the professionalism of the officiating crew tonight. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. So those comments drew a fine of $40,000. According to ESPN, they said that was pretty big considering the last three athletic directors that were fined in the past decade of note, as they said, were all $25,000. Yeah, so they hit them with a significant fine. And, well, before we get into what was the complaining, let's get into the complaint itself. And it was a hold that occurred with BYU trailing the game and got out of the shadow of their own goalpost. So first of all, just let's comment on the holding call itself.
I don't know if the broadcast did the greatest job of showing it, but you know, these days everybody has a camera, on them and looking at the play, and you see all these angles. It's a very clear hold, like easily a correct call.
Yeah, the cornerback looks like he is in press coverage, right? And all the videos I saw, the receiver was trying to take an inside route and then break to the outside and hopefully get open quickly. And that's exactly when the corner basically reached out and grabbed him. And that pretty much took that wide receiver out of the play. And that is the deep wing's key right there, and he is watching it the whole time. And I think that immediately drew his flag, and I think it's going to get a flag every time, as much as the complaining from the commenters out there of, oh, that happens on every play. It does not happen on every play. That is a clear grab and restrict. It takes the receiver out of the play. It gives the quarterback one less person to throw to, and it was rightly called.
It's a clear example of a call magnified by the situation. Whereas, you know, if this had happened in the middle of the first quarter or sometime in the first half and it was an insignificant time, it probably wouldn't have gotten as much flack. You know, prior to our recording, I was letting everyone know, you know, I'm not really a college football guy. That probably comes with the culture of being from New England. So the reason why I say that is I saw the reaction before I actually even saw the play. And when I saw the reaction, I was thinking, this is something catastrophic, something to the likes I've had never seen before. And then when I watched the sequence, I thought, where is this ire coming from? I really don't get it, because as we've already alluded to, it looked like a hold from the angles we saw. One of the angles that I think was a phone camera that I ended up seeing, you can see the receiver being kind of knocked off kilter because the cornerback is reaching out, trying to slow him down. It's a textbook hold. And I was waiting, I think, for something else to happen that led to that comment by the athletic director, which is way out of line. Obviously, I think the fine is well deserved. But yeah, I'm not sure what all the fuss was about here, unless there was something that happened afterward in terms of discussions on the field. But in terms of the call was 100% correct.
Yeah, and when you see a receiver, as you say, get off kilter, the antenna's going up right away that they don't just slip. There's some action that precipitated that drew that into that situation, especially that early in the route. It's not like he's trying to pull off a cheap DPI or something like that. It's early in the route where things can happen. So you're not going to risk trying to fool the official into a foul there. Yeah, there's no there. Not really very much to base the argument on, but it just the heat on that and just seeing the reaction from the coach and the AD who was on the field. He was actually on the field during the final play of the game. But you're looking at a situation where, okay, yeah, 10 yards, and yeah, they're not right backed up against the goal line, but they still had to march down the field. So it's not really, it may have kick-started the drive, but the drive continued nonetheless. So yeah, it's one of those situations, we see it an awful lot, where there's just that one element that people latch on to and say, well, the officials did this, whether or not there's a valid argument on it. But then it's one play that led to something else, and there were multiple things beyond that that were in your control, if that were the case. But let's dissect this. I mean, obviously, those words were pretty strong. Then there's the argument that sometimes comes up, although in this case it's a little extreme, so I haven't heard very much of it, which is, well, can't you criticize the officials? The one that we see is kind of boxed in is Tom Brady, because of his ownership interest in the Raiders, that being an owner, he is now bound by those rules, and now as a broadcaster can't speak, supposedly. I mean, there are obviously limits. So let's just kind of explore that end of it. Where's the line, do you think, for criticizing officiating?
Well, I think there's a very big difference between we felt a call didn't go our way, or that was a tough call, could have gone another way. And what the AD said, basically said that we got cheated out of the game.
And not only those strong comments, but the fact that it came from the AD. Sometimes we may see more criticisms from players or coaches, but to hear this level of criticism that is coming not just from a coach, but from an aide is extremely unsettling, because especially speaking from experience at the high school level, the ADs are the ones that are usually there to back you. They're here there to make sure you get into the locker room safely if something happens on the field that maybe didn't go your way, or their team's way, I should say. So to hear this level of harsh criticism coming from an athletic director is just, I can't even put into words how embarrassing that is for him. And from an officiating standpoint, it wouldn't be a welcome environment moving forward.
Yeah, it's completely unprofessional. He is a fan or a keyboard warrior or whatever you want to call him. He is not doing his job as an athletic director at that point. And unfortunately, he put himself in front of a mic, and we were kind of chatting again of how many ADs go in front of a mic for a press conference after a game. Usually very few, if any, except this guy who wanted to basically put his face out there and say he got cheated. And again, when it comes to criticism of officials, I think rules analysts do a good job where it's like, hey, I wouldn't have called that. That didn't look like a good call. And that's understandable. It's when you bring up the, like you said, Cam, the cheating, the bribing when it comes to sports gambling, that's always on the radar of officials. And that usually gets, if we hear that from coaches on the sideline, that's usually just an ejection. Like, no, you've crossed a giant boundary going to the fact that you're questioning my integrity by saying we're cheaters or we're on the take or whatever. And that's really what this athletic director has done at this point. And I think he's lost all credibility with any, whether it's the director of officials for that conference or whatever. I think everyone has lost a great amount of respect for him because of those comments.
Well, and that was the other comment, that when he said he was disgusted by their professionalism, I mean, that is just an absolute dagger to the core. Be that it may, that you just disagree with the call, they are still professionals. They have still made it to that level. They are Big 12 officials because they earned Big 12 officiating status. They got there through their work, just like he got there as an athletic director, presumably. We're not questioning his credentials, but in the moment we're saying, what are you doing? This is unbecoming of an athletic director. And even to add to it, it's not like that microphone was put in front of him right after the call or right after the game. Everybody went back to the lockers. They set up the press conference. It usually takes some time for the press conference to get going. And he was just at that level still with all that cool down time that was allowed in between. And then on the other hand, the example that that then sets for your student athletes.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, it's not like coach, I mean, I don't know how much obligations there are necessary in college football, but the coaches have the obligation to speak in the NFL. It's not like he had the obligation to speak and had an emotional outburst. He chose to speak, which ADs basically don't ever do. He decided to put himself there and make those comments. And it's just the height of irony to call the officials unprofessional when he ends up on the field during a play and then does that after the game.
To call into question professionalism and or integrity, to go back to the late, great Art McNally, those were his two biggest tenets. So to attack those is, as Ben said, it truly is a dagger to us as officials.
We could see him in a press conference after the game saying, look, I really don't think that was a hold. That's something I'm going to have to bring up to head of officiating. I'm going to have to bring this up to the conference. We really felt that we got screwed on that. And if that is just touching the edge right there, but expressing the frustration and your opinion about the call, and you can discuss the call. And I think that one of the things that, again, going back to Tom Brady and what he can and cannot say, yeah, he's a little bit more muzzled than some of the broadcasters are. He can still discuss a call. He can still say, I don't agree with that. I don't think that that's correct, or I found that this happened to me before and this was called this way. I don't think that it's consistent. You know, couch your argument and present it. But as soon as to say that these officials have really struggled in this game, well, now that's making a value judgment on their work. And then that is where you start to tip the scale over to the other side, where it becomes something where somebody's fine, then all the way to the other, to the complete end of the scale, which is this meltdown that happens after the game. I know he's apologized. Obviously, the sanction is very severe. I think that it also had carried into the fact that he did confront the officials after the game. There's a video out there that shows that he was approaching Kevin Marr, who was the official, the referee in that game, who came over from the Pac-12. Just as Utah has. He was hired as the conference started to split apart. He moved on to the Big 12, but made some comments about him being in the Pac-12. So now that also goes back to a thing where we've said in the past that at that level, they start scouting officials. Maybe not in some of these lower levels, but they know who they're getting and where they came from and their background, and obviously at the NFL level as well. We've even seen that where it's difficult to get information because of this kind of culture of attack. Every college, for every official from 1920 up until like about 2 or 3 years ago, we were provided that information by the NFL. Every year they publish that information. Now they're starting to say, well, maybe we shouldn't give their college. Maybe we shouldn't show their outside occupation. I mean, these are things that can be found, but it still goes to that point where they're scouting and looking for something and trying to find something specifically to say to that official.
Yeah, I have a colleague that works at a higher level conference. And he threw a flag that was basically an unsportsmanlike on a coach, and kind of feedback he got from a supervisor is that every coach knows that you have the fortitude to throw that flag on them, and they will all know it going into the game. So they may choose differently how they deal with the official.
And on a more minor level, piggybacking off of that, a quick anecdote that kind of speaks to the same thing. I worked a first-round playoff game this past Friday with the home team that was in the game. I was a line judge, so I was on their sideline. I had worked their game the previous week as well as 2 weeks prior to that. So this was my third time seeing them in 4 weeks. And in the second game I had with them, I had given some of their assistant coaches some, they were pretty much coming out into the white and even onto the field at some points. And I was giving them a hard time, as I feel is warranted. And the funny thing is, the following week, which was this past Friday, I had a playoff game there. I'm expecting, oh, I'm going to have to deal with this again. I talked to the head coach in pregame. And when I lined up for that first scrimmage down after the kickoff, everyone was way back to where they should be. And I knew right away, I was like, oh, it's because I gave them a hard time last week. They remember. A little minor example, but it made me think of that when you brought that up, Pat, that that's kind of what just happened to me this past week in my game. They saw me. They knew that I would give them a hard time if they were out too close. And they started out, everyone was way back, and I was pleased. I flashed the head coach a smile after that first play.
Well, and you mentioned high school playoffs, which are starting to get underway across the country at different levels. You also have the big rivalry games around Thanksgiving, which, say what you will about the bowl games, about the NFL playoffs, which are obviously going to draw your attention and everything like that. But this is just like the root of it. I mean, you know, not to get all sappy sentimental and all that, but this is like the root of football. Where I used to live, there was a rivalry that went across a state border, and it was in place for over 100 years. Lots of these long-standing traditions that go into previous centuries, as it were. And so now, starting the playoffs, you're in a new atmosphere, it seems. We do see this at the NFL level, where we hear, oh, there's not as many penalties called in the playoffs. Why is that? They're officiating it differently. But I think that you, first of all, you have better teams that are making the playoffs. One mistake is magnified. It's not over the schedule. It's over one game, and that one game determines as to whether or not you push ahead. So I think that there's probably a little more checking of oneself in these games, whether it be the players, whether it be the coaches, to make sure that I don't want to get that 15-yard penalty where I just started charging out onto the field. So I think that you see a little bit more disciplined football once you enter the playoffs.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head where the good teams are the disciplined teams, right? They're the ones that aren't hitting people after the play because they know they're going to get fouls. And here in Michigan, interestingly enough, you know, you brought up the whole rivalry thing. I'm not sure if it's deliberate or not. I'm sure it is deliberate, but most of our first round and second round playoffs games, they kind of line up with geography. So if you're all Division I, let's say, and you have a rival in Division I, typically you're going to run into them again in the first round. Or the second round, perhaps. And I've seen that a couple times already this year in Michigan, where the rivalry game went one way and the rematch in the playoffs went a different way. And that's kind of, like you said, the pageantry of high school athletics is you get those rivalries and you get all these things going on, and then they have to just, you have to go through them again. But they are very disciplined, and they're, most of the games we know we watch on Huddle, right? We'll see them after the fact, and they're usually just really well-played games, even for a high school level. And it makes them fun to officiate and, I think, fun to watch as well.
Yeah, to speak on that, my game that I had on Friday, we only had 4 flags the whole game, which is probably something you won't see in the regular season. A reason why I brought this up as a topic that I wanted to discuss was kind of to see how it differed state to state in terms of format as well as officiating. So it's interesting to hear, Chris, because in Mass, it's not geographically based at all. So we have our 8 divisions, and the divisions are strictly based on the population of the school. Depending on how you're seated in any round of the playoffs, you could be playing from any part of the state. And I know our state isn't as big as some of the others, but you could have a team from the tip of Cape Cod playing against a team that's on the western end of the state that's bordering New York. It could be geography has no bearing on the matchups. It's solely based on seeding and your division. We can work one division game in 1 week, and the following week, if you get assigned another playoff game, you could potentially get another division, because in terms of our assigning, we get assigned to playoff games, at least for the first two rounds, based off of the leagues we're normally working in the regular season. And those teams within those leagues that we work may be in different divisions. One school may be a big school, one school may be a small school. So my game last week was a round of 16 game. It was a Division 5 game. And my quarterfinal this week is a Division 3 game. So it all basically just depends on where you're working. The final 2 weeks are assigned by the state based off of recommendations from the schools and the assigners. And but those are the ones that everyone wants. But obviously, yeah, as we go along, you can see, you know, a school from a different part of the state you may never have been to before, maybe traveling to play the team you're working that you normally work in the regular season. So, yeah, it all depends on that. And it's really fun to be able to see some new teams. And obviously the discipline is there. And when you see these teams, especially as you move into later rounds of the playoffs. Yeah. Four flags last week, and one of them was a kickoff out of bounds. So that's when you know those are teams that are ready to play in the postseason.
Yeah, up in Illinois, the largest two classes do straight seeding, 1 of 32, and then the rest is pretty geographical. So actually, the high school that I went to on the second round, now they're in the third smallest class, and they put the school they played this past weekend in the second round is kind of seen as the de facto state championship already. And it was a 14-13 game, ended on a 2-point conversion with 10 seconds left, so phenomenal game. But after that, like the largest two, and I'm in the Chicago area, so most of our schools are the larger schools, and you see who you see.
Let me just finish up with the 2 minutes or so that we have. It's in the rule book, and it's in everybody's hip pocket, it seems, on social media. We would probably see this called about 20 times a season, judging by what we see on social media, which is the assisting the runner foul. We saw it called against Tennessee in their game against Mississippi State. In this case, it was pushing from behind. Then somebody came in and joined and pulled forward. Matt Austin on the broadcast, their rules analyst, was saying, yeah, there was more pushing from behind, and it was kind of like a late join-in. But I don't know. The yardage was gained because of the pull. So we even joked about this before that every white hat is up on the signal for that one time that it comes up. They know what the signal is. So have you seen this unicorn of officiating, the assisting the runner?
I just had it last week in high school. It's a lot more of a liberal interpretation because you know, it's not just pulling that's illegal. It's pushing as well. So at the high school level, it may be more common to see. I called it as a white hat, I think last year, and I posted a clip of it. We posted a clip of it on our Twitter feed, and I think the caption we used was illegal conga line. We'll have to find that and put that on the show page because that was a good one that we had. But yeah, in high school, it's more common. But you know, once you see that grab and pull at the higher levels, sometimes we see it and the flag doesn't come out. But I was happy to see the flag come out in this instance. It's been over 30 years since we've seen it in the NFL.
Yeah, I have not seen one this year. We had a bigger rivalry game in one of the conferences I work end on a play that could have been there. So there was a big discussion on it, but personally, I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, you're seeing it more at the youth level, too, even below high school, because the Philly special is everywhere, right? So you all want to emulate that. And like Cam said, it's not allowed anywhere on NFHS or below.
And not only was that last one in the NFL, goodness, more than 30 years ago, but they wound up declining that penalty anyway. So we have to go even further back before we actually find it being assessed. And with that, we wrap up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. Thanks to Pat Weber, Chris Soibert, Cam Philippe. I'm Ben Ostro. Dropping a new episode every Tuesday throughout the season. We're going to take a little bit of time off during bowl season there when things are a little bit crazy there, but we'll have a few more episodes up through Thanksgiving, and you can catch up on some of the old ones. By all means, spread the word. If you're listening on the Football Zebras website, You can also find us on your preferred podcasting app, which you can please give us 5 stars, like, and subscribe. Many thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.